See, it's very difficult on the streaming services to know what's live and what's not.
You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields. It is very hard to believe that I'm saying this, but welcome to the first From the Dome to Your Home podcast of the 2024 legislative session. I am very happy to welcome my regular guest.
Am I not really a guest anymore?
Scott Slatton.
Can I get a promotion up to assistant to the co-host?
Mr. Producer, we'll think about that. We'll talk about it. And then we also have my people, Erica and Joni, our two lobbyists that represent your interest at the State House. Joni, Erica, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Thanks, guys.
Glad to be here. y'all, it's been a busy week.
It's only been 1 week.
For 3 days in.
But there was a storm.
That's right.
That counts for like 4 days.
There was a storm outside and inside.
Yeah, exactly.
State House.
Right. Yes. We've been in it for what, 72 hours?
Yes.
Yes.
Feels like 72 days.
Right. And we have a lot to talk about. So I hope everybody that is listening just get comfortable. Maybe grab a hot tea. Nice. It's chilly outside, so
it's quite comfortable, actually.
Of course it is. It's freezing. My hands are freezing.
Mine too.
I asked Jake to turn the heat up, and he said that
he has a thermometer now.
He was like, "It's perfectly fine." So I put on my jacket. All right, y'all. First week, right out of the gate, your impressions of how this. Tell me how it feels. The difference between the first week of the second part of the session and the first week of the first part. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. This is the second session of this, mm-hmm. You know, the second part of this 2 year session. How's that different than coming in with a fresh group?
Well, I think it's different too, because it's an election year for both bodies. So you can tell when there were people out in the lobby. The lobby was crowded today and yesterday, not so much Tuesday because of the storm, but people already have an agenda that they're trying to finish that they started last year, is the feeling that I was getting in the lobby. Whereas last year, the agenda items were new and fresh. This year, mm-hmm. people are still, you know, going back and circling back to those.
There's a sense of, I got to hurry up and get this done.
Yes.
Or it dies. Mm-hmm. And I feel, to answer your question, that this session so far, 3 days in, has been rushed for some reason. Yesterday, being summoned to offices. That didn't happen the first week of last session to talk to legislators. It feels rushed. There's no soft on-ramp to this session.
I would say the way I would describe it is, but just like we always talk about in the second year, that 2 year session, bills that didn't pass just pick up where they left off, mm-hmm. where they were in place.
Yeah.
Similar feel in terms of what we're doing now. With these conversations that we're having with legislators and with lobbyists, really we just picked up where we left off when we left however many months ago. And but to your point, Erica, everybody has a greater sense of urgency to get these things done that didn't get done, because just like we've been talking about, Casey, everybody understands that there are lots of other big culture war issues in particular that are going to take up a lot of time on the calendar. So we better get what we can get now, because we may not have time later in the session. So,
well, and you know, this year crossover kind of has a different feel.
Oh, absolutely.
Crossover is that month before the adjournment, the sine die adjournment that, it requires bills to pass out of the originating body. And so once crossover happens, this year, bills truly are dead
if
they didn't cross
over. At the end of the session last year, we still got next year.
Right.
And obviously, that's not the case this time. So
you got to start from
better
scratch.
Get on it or not.
So let's just talk about the House and Senate real quick and how they look this session for the second part. The House is missing one House member, has one vacancy because Representative Dion Tedder ran for retiring Senator Marlon Kempson's seat and won. Mm-hmm. So he is in the Senate. Senator Tedder is a new face in the South Carolina Senate, along with former Columbia City Councilwoman Tamika Isaac Devine. She won the special election to fill the Columbia, the Richland County Senate district for the late and great, in my opinion, Senator John Scott. They were sworn in Tuesday. Mm-hmm. They were seated, and they are on the one. Their main committee is the Senate Judiciary Committee. Yes.
And they're both lawyers. So
and they're both
great.
Lawyers, so yeah. That's really good. Mm-hmm. Also, Senator Margie Bright Matthews mm-hmm. moved over to Senate Finance. Nice. Some people call that a promotion. Some people mm-hmm. don't.
Depends on if you're a number person or not.
Depends mm-hmm. on. So that is kind of how, you know, that's what we're looking at. We added a female senator yes. to the Senate to bring that number yes. to six. I believe that's the most the South Carolina Senate has ever had in its history.
Really?
I believe that. Yeah. Yes. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm. And of course, mm-hmm. the addition of those two triggered the need to reassign seats or repick seats in the
yes.
Senate.
Yes.
Which they usually always pick new seats at the beginning of the 2-year session, but seems like lately, in the Senate in particular, they're having to pick seats even in the off year.
Well, and we also had to do the committee, you know, the committee, the choosing of the committees.
Yeah.
That process is different in the Senate because in the House, the speaker tells you what committees you're on.
That's right.
You can choose, like you can give him a list and say, I sure would like to be on.
It's your top three.
Right. Like I sure would like to, but he's going to put you where he wants to.
I asked Joni yesterday how one particular member ended up on a particular committee. And
to remain nameless.
Yeah, remain. I won't name the member or the committee, but it seemed interesting to me that member was on that committee. So,
like, you mean it was like a big committee for like a freshman member?
Yeah, okay. It was a. Right. It's a fairly.
We'll go with that.
It's a fairly important committee, and, right? And yeah, so interesting.
So we. That's kind of what that's what they spent the day, and also in the House. The seats are chosen through a lottery.
Yeah.
They usually have a child of a staff member draw names for the counties. And then whatever county you caucus with, you pick your seats.
You know, COO Jake Broom uses a Wheel of Fortune random generator thing. That's how he.
That's what right. kind of drawing?
To do what?
For the drawing for.
They're kind of like, what did we miss out on?
Yeah.
Like,
so when he needs to has to do a drawing for something, he deploys this random generator
yes.
that has like a Wheel of Fortune feel to
like
it.
Like if too many people want to buy the old computers.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's what
to generate a,
that's what the house ought to do is get the random generator.
Probably I know, but it's cuter with the kid. The kid
But the kid can cheat though. So
They pick that they can't
wants
read.
To get out of there. Get me off of the stage. Let me go.
Already Jenny, you mentioned election year.
Yeah.
The longest serving senator in the South Carolina Senate, Senator Nikki Setzler, I guess published an op-ed saying that he was an editorial that he was not going to seek another term.
I don't think anybody saw that coming.
I didn't either.
And apparently, based on the gossip we heard in the lobby today, is the word got out before he intended it to get out.
Oh,
so
no.
He
had to get in front of
the local paper had to make an apology tweet embargoing the news. You know, per his timeline. So, that's the word. That was the word in the lobby today.
We won't go into everything, but there are other senators who are talking about not running again. Mm-hmm. There are other senators talking about running again. There are House members that are already tweeting about their intention to run for Senate seats.
Yep.
So it's going to be a pretty interesting months.
When's the filing deadline?
March 30th.
Yeah, so we got a while to go yet. Yeah.
Jason Elliott, announced his bid for Senate.
It's going to be pretty wild from now until the end of filing where we know who is, not running.
You mentioned that Senator Setzler was the longest serving state senator in the entire United States.
In the state and in the United States.
Correct. I did not know the U.S.
Yes.
Okay. He has been serving. He was 31 years old when he entered the Senate in 1976.
Yep.
So Tedder is not the youngest senator to serve. Tedder is 33, I believe.
Okay. Well, maybe current.
Yeah.
Like right now.
Right.
But
right now.
Yeah. Senator Setzler was 31
wow.
when he.
Wow.
There you go.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And he could still, if he wanted to, keep serving in that seat. I think he could get reelected. And he's, because he's really very vigorous for somebody his age. So, you know,
I think,
in his
I think he probably could. I mean, he's carried that district for a really long time amid a lot of changes, you know, in politics.
Yeah.
But, you know, he ran 4 years ago. And if you saw the article in the paper, the margin has decreased steadily over the last like 4 or 5 terms.
Because he's a Democrat.
Because he continues to be a Democrat.
In a largely Republican stronghold over in Lacey County.
Do y'all know what I'm looking forward to? And we always do this during election time, is when we create a folder of all the other candidates that we don't know anything about.
And
we
research them?
Yes, and we research them. And then we
I started my spreadsheet the other day.
Cannot wait.
I got my spreadsheet
out. Send the link.
I am
share that
ready.
Share it.
Because I have already listed everybody. And then
so
I've started
fun.
To kind of fill in like who we know is definitely running, not running.
Right.
So we can get a picture. Because I... This is my prediction. This is the opinion of Casey Fields, not the Municipal Association of South Carolina. I think that both the House and Senate will look and feel very different in 2025.
Oh, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed, 100%.
I agree.
And I think something that listeners should know is as we're talking about monitoring the changes in the House and the Senate, we also have to monitor the constant changes in the lobby. So lobbyists that we were working with in one capacity last session, they're no longer there.
Yes.
And they're in a completely different role. So we're
or somebody has taken on a client that is now against us instead of
navigating
working with
that
us.
World.
Or lobbyists are now staff people. So which is that's always fun though. Because
they've moved either from the staff position to the lobby or from the lobby to a staff position.
Yes.
It's all about relationships.
Let's get into the weeds on some legislation.
Okay.
If y'all are ready for that.
If you must.
Any other, any other topics that we need to...
I much enjoy
sorry,
punditry rather than the technical
and
stuff.
And cut right there.
For one of the for one of our listeners, Miriam Hare, our former executive director, there has to be an equal balance of technicality as well as...
Well,
punditry.
Mo doesn't listen. We know that.
Punditry.
So we can say whatever we want.
We can... So, Erica, you are working on the zero millage legislation.
This
is not anything new to the association. We have tried on this bill before several years ago. But tell me kind of where that is in the House and Senate and what we are, you know, where we're looking.
So zero millage. Currently, we have 59 cities that do not have an operating millage. So we're working on legislation to allow them to create an operating millage. This has been introduced, thankfully, today in the Senate, sponsored by Senator...
Today's Thursday, the 11th, right?
By Senator Gambrill and co-sponsored by Senator Mastey, who is the Senate Majority Leader. This legislation, the same language that we're using, just the dates are different, passed the Senate 35-3 back in 2019. So we're fairly confident that it'll pass again. I spoke to Senate Finance Staffer, who just asked me to get either Senator Mastey or Gambrill to request a subcommittee hearing. He did say he can't promise it, but we're likely to get a subcommittee hearing this session. I spoke to Representative Jay Jordan in the House, and he is working on a House strategy. He's thinking about, we asked him to introduce a companion bill in the House, and he feels that there is another member that's probably better suited to introduce this bill in the House, and he wanted to have some conversations there. So we're moving forward. I can say that I'm fairly confident in the Senate, that the Senate will pass zero millage. I know for a fact, so let me just go ahead and get this out there to our listeners, that we're going to need help in the House. So once this bill passes the Senate, I see that faith there. I'm just speaking that out in the atmosphere.
Yes. Put it out there.
We're going to convene. It'll likely be a call with our cities and towns, those 59 that lack that operating millage, because we're going to need you to communicate to your House member why it is important for you to have that operating millage in your city or town. They need to hear from you. Joni had conversations with a member who was learning on the spot from their new administrator some of the challenges that they're facing because they don't have an operating millage. That's important for them to hear from you all more so than us. So 100%. We're going to need your help to get that through. Again, we have just this session, or the bill dies, the effort dies. And we have it's an uphill battle in the House. So we're going to have to do this together.
I like your optimism.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
I do. I really do. I appreciate it.
Is this your way of telling me, bless your heart?
No. Bless your heart. Oh, such a good kid.
Such a sweet kid.
I was waiting, Scott. I was waiting.
Scott, whenever we're like, no, we can do that, Scott will be like, oh, isn't she cute?
Keeping hope alive.
Such a good kid.
Well, I told you about a conversation I had with another lobbyist. He was like, his resolution was to be more positive this session. And and he said, so in a positive light, now that this is the end of the first week, there's only 16 weeks left. And I said, theoretically. He goes, oh, you can't think like that. I said, but they just passed the first order of business in the House of Representatives this week was to pass the continuing resolution.
Right. Which is
quite foreboding. So
yeah. Let's talk about that for a second.
Okay, go.
So we haven't had to use a continuing resolution since 2020.
Right.
When we were because of COVID. Yeah. And we've never since, I mean, this is my 14th, 15th, 16th, I don't know, year up here. And I've never had them do this beforehand. So I don't know if this is ominous or not. Right. To me, it felt a little ominous that we were doing this as the first order of business.
Right. Normally they don't do it until well into the budget year. I mean, the budget debate where they think, well, we might need it, but we might not.
But thinking on the positive side, they're just being prepared this time.
They are. So for our listeners, a continuing resolution in regards to the budget allows the state to continue to operate under a budget that they did last year for those recurring dollars. So anything that was non-recurring would not be included in this continuing resolution.
If they don't adopt a state budget by June 30th, so it's like by the parachute. End of the fiscal year.
Yes, it's a parachute.
And for you cities out there who think that it's okay for you to pass continuing resolutions, there's no provision in statute for you to do that. Although some do. I mean, you have to figure out a way to do it. But technically, we as cities and towns can't pass CRs like the state.
While you're talking about the budget, Joni, talk a little bit about your testimony on Tuesday afternoon in the middle of the roaring thunderstorm. Yeah. You were testifying on behalf of cities and towns in support of the local government fund.
Can I lead up to it when I picked Scott up and the
yeah, go ahead.
The red lights were turned sideways and it was the wind was blowing. No, we got there. It was great. It was short and sweet. They have been acting in accordance to Act 84 that passed in 2019 since 2020. They first implemented it in 2021. But this, with the Act of 84, it allows cities to plan for a budget. Mm-hmm. And that's what we told them. You know, we need this so that our cities can prepare for a budget. And I was told by the chairman that it looks like they're going to get a 5%. Don't hold us to that. But right now, the budget forecast looks like a 5%.
$14 million, I think that's what Chairman Murphy said.
Yeah. Well, that's where they are now.
Total. Yeah, right now. Yeah.
Right now.
But the BEA estimate will probably, likely, hopefully, be larger, which will increase the size of the state budget.
That is correct. And we get a new estimate this February.
Right.
So in a couple of weeks.
So right now, I think that's over $800 million in new money.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about before.
That's lower compared to what it was last year, right?
It's not $2.1 billion that we have in the current budget, but it's still more.
What does that tell us?
It's the spending in the South Carolina economy. The money that comes in for the budget is how much taxpayers put into the state.
So I think, and Frank Rainwater can, you know, he's the one to best explain this, but my sense of it is there's a lot of that $2.1 billion was likely federal stimulus money that was still washing through the economy from the feds from COVID.
Yeah.
All that money's largely now washed through the economy. And so we're getting back to normal. Regular type
spending
economic
habits.
Growth.
Yeah, that's what I heard him say.
Right. So, more than $800 million. That's his last estimate from when? December, I guess.
November. It was November.
November. Mm-hmm. We'll get one in February. And of course, the BEA estimate that comes out in May is always the biggest. Yeah. So it's likely that we'll have even more than the $800 million.
And the House really doesn't get to work with that one that comes out in May. That is going to be the Senate to work with until they come back and go to conference.
But the reason it's important for us to think about and talk about how much more new money the General Assembly is going to have is because it continues to raise the size of the state budget. And under Act 84, the local government fund increases by the same percentage of growth that the state budget does,
up to 5%. 5%, yeah.
So if the state budget grows by 5%, then the LGF goes up by 5%. If the state budget grows by 10%, we still only get 5%. So I think we can be quite confident that we'll get the additional 5% into the local government fund onto this current base.
Yeah. Right.
So you take the base that was passed for FY24, add 5%, and there you go.
Yeah, I mean, do the math just like you would your own salary compensation.
Right.
You get a raise every year, it goes on your base.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about a new bill that was introduced in the Senate. We walked in here as it was being released, and
I think I hollered from my office.
I think you did too. Go back to the familiar issue of short-term rentals. A bill was just introduced by Senator Brian Adams from the Goose Creek, Monk's Corner area, Goose Creek. Not mirroring Representative Lee Hewitt's bill, but close to it, Erica?
Close to it. This is Senate Bill 953 introduced today. And so we hadn't had time to really digest it just yet. But by a quick glance at it, the language is there to prohibit local governments from restricting and regulating short-term rentals.
So same thing that we've seen in the House on a couple of occasions by way of two bills, and now we have one in the Senate. So no surprise there. If you're talking to legislators, you have short-term rental regulations on your books, you need to be talking to those legislators about why it's important that you and your residents, elected officials, local elected officials, you and your residents come to resolutions on how to deal with short-term rentals in your community, because your needs and your views and dependence on STRs may be different than another community across the state. So
which is why
you need the flexibility to be able to deal with these issues, these unique issues, because your community is unique from others.
Which is why a one-size-fits-all approach won't work.
And Casey, I literally had elevator speech with a member yesterday and mentioned that, you know, South Carolina doesn't have one game zone.
Hunting
games
and feathers.
Yeah. That's right.
Men's furs and feathers over here. We don't have one games on. Why would you make this issue a one size fits all? Because our state is so diverse.
Yeah. And it's important just to let our listeners know where we are with this. Both bills are currently in committee. Right. None of them have passed the subcommittee level, but it's still important that you start talking to your legislators now
Keep
to help us keep
going.
It there. We don't want any of these bills, either one of these bills, to gain steam and move through the committee process. So we were able to keep the House bill in subcommittee.
So far.
Working with those members so far. And we're hoping to keep this bill in the Senate in committee.
And for the cities out there that already have these regulations in place, I think, Joni Nickel here, again, not the association, thinks it's important that you talk about how well those regulations are doing for your city. So this doesn't have to be a negative campaign against all these short-term rental bills. This can be something positive that comes from it.
Yeah.
Look what we're doing. Look how well it's worked
and how
out.
How we got here. I often think about the city of North Charleston and how they spent the better part of a year holding sessions with homeowners and rental property owners to come up with a compromise.
They put in the work.
They did. Yep, they listened and they had a compromise that I believe is working today. And so they had that flexibility because there wasn't a preemption law. They were able to bring together everyone and come up with something that could work.
Local government officials are quite capable of managing these issues. Wouldn't you think?
You would think because the constituents that elect them also elect the people.
I think that's lost on people.
Yeah.
I believe, maybe I'm biased, but the government closest to the people knows what's going on in the neighborhoods. They know what's going on the, and they're picking up people's trash every day, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something to be said for that.
All right. That's enough about short-term rentals.
Can I talk about abandoned buildings real quick?
Yeah.
Sorry. I just memorized the number.
We're going to pause now for a commercial from one of our sponsors, Joni Nickel and the Abandoned Buildings.
It was pre-filed, House Bill 4547. So we talked about this a lot, Jen Rams. This is the Abandoned Buildings Revitalization Act. And what was pre-filed says that it attached a CPI, the Consumer Price Index, to raise that cap from $500,000 based on the CPI. The Senate is going to introduce, Senator Tom Davis is going to introduce similar legislation, but he's going to take out that CPI language. The Senate did not like that language, and they are going to hopefully change that cap at $500,000 to $750,000. But we will see. This is something that we are pushing. We are working with the business development community on this, because right now this will not sunset till 2025. But right now for the business development community, it is hard for them to go to a bank and get a loan based on a piece of legislation that is going to expire in a year. So we are hoping for a 10-year sunset extension, and I think we can get that done.
Perfect. Thank you for
And the commercial is now over.
Thank you for your commercial, for your bill. We're going to start doing competitions about who can bring in and do a better commercial for their bill that they're working on next week. Ooh, zero millage.
Okay.
Game on. Challenge accepted.
Let's talk kind of nerdy for a second.
Okay.
This is not really going to make a huge difference to a regular listener unless they really study the House and the Senate, unless they really, really...
Or if they listen to this podcast.
Or a student, because we do talk about the rules a good bit.
Yes.
The House has several bills proposing rule changes. It has to come out of the House Rules Committee and voted on by the body. The two biggest ones that are going to somewhat mirror what the Senate does, if it's not set in stone. But I believe the Senate will get into this. The Senate will get to this eventually, from what I understand. The House is proposing to eliminate the motion period. Mm-hmm. That is a part of the day that is on the calendar that gives members a opportunity to make a motion to alter the order of the calendar, like placing a bill on special order, moving something into masthead, those types of motions. You do not have to wait to the motion period to make a motion for anything, but certain motions require the motion period. Go ahead.
It's only been utilized once in, 15 years or something?
Yeah, that's what Chairman Thayer said yesterday, something like 10
think,
years.
Yeah, they don't use the motion period that much. I think the Senate uses it way more
They used it to set the ESG bill, the ESG investment bill to special order for next week.
So that I want to come back to that real quick, because I want to talk about that. That's fine. And they're also proposing to give a bill 3 hours of debate until you invoke cloture or make the motion to bring the debate to an end. And
that's what cloture
limit
is.
Cloture is limiting the debate.
Yeah,
right.
After, because in the House over the years, we've seen debates rage on over issues for well beyond 3 hours.
But Scott, we've also seen people invoke cloture after 10 minutes.
Right, immediately.
Like not even giving anybody a chance.
So the way the rule changed, the proposed rule change was explained yesterday in the Rules Committee, is that at least 3 hours of debate would have to take place on a bill before cloture could be invoked. But even after cloture is invoked, that does not set a time limit on the debate. Necessarily, they could continue to debate it, but once they get to a point to where, so 3 hours goes by, you don't have to at the end of the third hour invoke cloture. You could wait another 3 hours. You could wait 6 hours total to invoke cloture.
They just but
you
have to give debate.
You have to debate
chance.
It at least 3 hours before you can invoke it. But once you invoke it, then this is a new wrinkle.
Yeah, the whole amendment limiting.
Yeah, they will allow the minority leader and the majority leader in the House to choose 12 amendments among those that are
a piece
among those that are already on the desk, and then the majority leader and the minority leader can both have one of their own for a total of 13 each. And then once they choose those potentially 13 amendments, up to those 13 amendments, that's it. Those are the only amendments that could be debated beyond that point.
And they increased the time. So it was 3 minutes per amendment. Now it's 6 minutes per amendment.
Right. Per
because
side.
Fewer. Per side. Because there's fewer.
So I'm thinking back to when the House debated the medical marijuana bill a few sessions ago.
Well, they never did.
Well.
Right. But prior to that, there were like 1,000 amendments.
Literally 1,000, 1,000 amendments.
We watched the cart. I think, Erica, you took a picture of the cart with all of, like, they were pushing the amendments in. And it was reams and reams of paper.
This is an effort to stop that, it sounds like.
Yes, essentially. And because, admittedly, I would hope that people would be honest enough to admit that 1,000 amendments, you know, 950 of those are dilatory, which means they are frivolous.
One word.
Or a repetition.
A
repetition of what's
the same amendment with one or two words changed in it. And those are dilatory. And that's nothing but a delay tactic to try and extend debate and wear people out and then get your way.
Have done it before.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Of course. So the House is going to take that up next week, I presume, and make a vote on whether or not they want to change their rules.
Well, and Scott, that does not change the 1 hour debate for or against. So that stayed the same.
Yep. So each of those 13 amendments, the opponents, the proponents get 6 minutes each to debate them. And then you have, once those 13 are disposed of, or up to 13, 26 total are disposed of, then you get an hour on each side for or against, which is what's in place now.
Right.
Yeah, and it passed the Rules Committee 9-1. So
Yeah. So it's, and of course, we could do some rank speculation and punditry as to why they're making these changes. But if you've paid any attention to what's going on in the House of Representatives, particularly within the Republican caucus, you can figure out why leadership is seeking to do this.
You mentioned earlier, so the Senate uses the motion period to place bills on special order, which makes them, if they are contested bills, it puts them in a forced debate category.
Right.
So you have to debate those bills if you put it in special order as a priority on the calendar. Today, Thursday, Majority Leader Shane Massey, Republican from Edgefield, he put a bill on special order, or he made the motion to put a bill on special order, and it was approved. About what?
I'm not entirely, well, I haven't looked at this bill very carefully, but it's, as my understanding is, it is an effort to not to prohibit the state, and I would suppose subdivisions, from making investments in entities that have ESG
environmental
programs.
Social governmental,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. That's the extent that I'm aware of it. So so the state treasurer, Curtis Loftus, manages all of the state's investments. He does not believe in these ESG programs. So, you know, I would assume that he would want to divest the state from investments into companies that have ESG programs. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that would affect the state's bottom line in terms of its investments, but that's something that the Senate has set for priority.
That's what the Senate will start with on Tuesday. They'll go through the uncontested, and then they go immediately to special order.
And I haven't looked at it. I don't know if it. I would assume that it includes cities and towns. But cities and towns can't invest in equities anyway.
Right.
So we're not going to have any direct investments in those kinds of companies. And for those who do have their cash in the local government investment pool, that, of course, is managed by the state treasurer's office. Mm-hmm. So the LGIP would fall under the purview of this. But again, I just don't see that it's going to have any sort of material effect on your ability to make to earn interest on those investments.
So. What else, y'all?
I would
other than being tired and a little slightly overwhelmed at the first 3 days of session.
That's
and,
me.
Yeah.
That's me.
Like, what all is kind of popping up?
My secretary just wrote me back and said that I was watching a Chief and Dolphins game, but it was in Germany last night. And by secretary, I mean my husband. So I just want to go on record and say I was right, that I was
so
watching
that
game.
Did play in Germany.
No.
But that was like at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it was still a rerun.
It was
that was a rerun.
It was a rerun. They went to Germany way earlier.
For those of you who didn't hear, Joni has fallen prey to alternative reality and a football game was streamed last night and she thought it was live when in fact it was a rerun.
It's been a long week.
That's a good description.
Listen, we're getting into the NFL playoffs. You can't play. Yeah, okay? No. You can't play with that.
Because we were talking about whether or not Tay-Tay was going to be at the game this weekend.
I know.
And you thought that they played last night. And
the second part of the tour starts pretty soon. So we're not going to be able to see her a lot at the games.
That's too bad.
Oh, really? She's not going to come off the road long enough to...
This is the international leg of her tour, so she's not going to be close.
I mean, the Chiefs, I don't see them getting to the Super Bowl again this year, but...
You don't?
No. No, their defense is...
I think my Buffalo Bills are
They can't score.
Oh, the Buffalo Bills.
Well, we know the Panthers aren't going anywhere.
Oh, the Panthers were bad. Can I say that?
Yes.
They were like really bad. Pay us
that's an objective fact. That's not an opinion. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that was bad.
We talk about being overwhelmed though. Our intern David Ibragimov, who came and spent his first day with us yesterday from Winthrop University, is going through the John C. West the John C. West program up there.
Did he quit after yesterday?
He was overwhelmed because we were dragging him around the state house yesterday.
Well, Scott,
but he had a cool opportunity at the state house yesterday.
He met the president
of Winthrop. Winthrop did their budget presentation before Ways and Means, and so he got an opportunity to go.
I think they're buds anyway. They're buddies anyway.
Oh, are they?
Well, I mean, I think he's met him before. David has. Yeah. So.
Okay. Or at least he acted like he.
He's very. Nice. This kid's very involved in things that are going on campus. So
pretty cool opportunity for him to hang out with such amazing people. I mean, I really do think that. I'm not saying that sarcastically, but I can't imagine yesterday being what it was for the three of y'all. I can't imagine being him walking and all, over the place where y'all all had to
go. Yeah, it was interesting. We had lunch, and just the couple hours that he'd been with me before lunch, he said, this is a whole different perspective on how things work in this world, in the bubble here, essentially. He goes, it never occurred to me that this is how things
really
get done. And until you're immersed in it.
You have
these ideas about these august bodies who are debating policy in a civilized manner, and
everybody's also see it on
everybody's
TV,
can't see everybody's hand raised right now.
Everybody's interest is are all aligned for the good of the people. And
that was
well, you watch streaming shows about politics and politicians, and
you're like, you're never like, here,
right? Yeah, or they're like, is it like House of Cards? And you're like, no.
This is what I tell people. If you're familiar with the Matrix trilogy, I always tell people it's like Morpheus gave me a choice between the red and the blue pill. I took the red pill and I can't unsee what I'm seeing.
You know what? I described that exactly to Mary Catherine yesterday on our staff, and she looked at me and had no clue what I was talking about.
She doesn't know the Matrix.
She goes, I know the Matrix. And then I started describing that scene, she was like, okay, maybe I haven't seen Matrix.
I have red one pill, better. We have a young lady on our staff. Bless her heart. She's in her 20s. Incredible. She's in our communications team, on our communications team.
We love her.
I had on a shirt, a Gordon Gartrell shirt, and it's from the most infamous episode of The Cosby Show. And I explained it to her. She's like, oh, yeah, I think I heard of The Cosby Show. And I was like, oh.
Y'all, that's what we watched on Thursday night was The Cosby Show in a Different World.
That and Family Matters.
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
Family Matters. We love it.
All right, what else you got?
We digress.
Yes. Sorry. Was banter. Maybe Mr. Producer might cut that out.
Please don't. next week, we are watching the Senate on the special order bill. We are, the House still has to deal with budget vetoes. That is still sitting on the calendar. That's for the end of January. Mm-hmm. Governor's State of the State is on January 24th. To close out the show, I'd like to pose a trivia question.
Take it away, Scott. You got it.
All right, ladies, here you go. This is your time to shine.
Governor will deliver his State of the State address on January 24th to a joint House and Senate in the House chamber at 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
There are some cities in South Carolina that are named for governors, South Carolina governors specifically. These go back around the time you were in elementary school, 1700s.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm back, out.
So,
back shortly after the founding.
So, right. So see if you can guess Some of them.
Named after governors, South Carolina governors.
You said it has to be a city?
Colonial governors as well, I presume.
Oh, yeah. That's
what most of them are, I would guess.
That's correct.
Hmm.
One's pretty easy.
Is one of them a...
If he gets all three of these, I'm taking this, I'm going to burn it, and I'm going to walk out of here.
Is one of them an answer to a... Part of an answer to a previous trivia question?
No.
No?
No.
I'm cheating. I'm looking.
All right, let's think then. Lawrence. Let's... Pickens.
Yes, no.
Pickens isn't one?
No.
Hmm.
But Lawrence is. He got the first...
Lawrence... Come on, help me out, ladies.
I've got nothing for you. I can't because I've seen it.
There's a statue of a governor on the state house grounds that has a municipality named for him. That municipality has been at the center of a murder mystery.
Oh, Hampton.
Yep.
Of course, Wade Hampton.
Wade Hampton.
The Watermelon Festival.
Which Hampton, though, Mr. Producer? One, two, or three? Number three? Okay, good. He also has a... Yeah, he's got that big statue out there in front of the Hampton
building.
And
then there's one more.
You're not a female, but you're a... What are you?
I was like...
You're not a woman, you're a...
Man?
Manning.
Oh, there you go. See? Yeah. See what I did there?
I know that. My best friend is from Manning.
This is the last time I'll let you look at the trivia answer. for John Lawrence Manning, governor in the 1850s.
Yeah.
I was trying to help him out.
You came out of the gate looking strong there for a second.
Yeah, he was, okay, but he was never governor, though. Okay, all right. So he was
maybe if new cities start to incorporate, there might be a Haley or a McMaster or a Beasley or a Hodges.
Or a Hodges.
There is a Hodges.
There is a Hodges.
There is a Hodges.
But it wasn't
named after
David Hodges.
Oh.
Jim Hodges. I'm sorry. Jim, I was combining David Beasley and Jim Hodges. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's been a long week. And now I can no longer look at the sheet. Thanks.
You've been banned from the trivia sheet. Anything else for the good of the order? Everybody, I hope you have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next week. Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.